the cheapest option is not going to be the most comfortable option. The cheapest option is going to be staying in a Cracker Barrel or a Walmart or any of those places that are free overnight camping in a parking lot somewhere. And it's going to be free and it's going to be uncomfortable. And at a certain point, we made the decision that free wasn't worth it. Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we are the authors of Where Should We Camp Next?, Where Should We Camp Next? National Parks, and Where Should We Camp Next? Budget Camping.
This year, we are celebrating the 10th anniversary of the RV Atlas podcast.
We hope you join us as we cover the best campgrounds, the best RVs, the best food, and the best gear to bring with you when you go.
So pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's Q&A episode of the RV Atlas. And Stephanie, I love doing these Q&A podcasts. Credit to you for thinking of it. And I think that like the reason I really am enjoying doing them is because there are truly so many great questions in our group. And our group is really great at giving people lots of cool answers. And it's really nice to see what like what people across the country think about a certain topic. And it just keeps making me think, like, I do not like social media. I would like to spend less time on social media, but I really do value and appreciate the RV Atlas group. And the fact that we're kind of forging this link between the podcast and the group has been a real win that I enjoy. So hope you're thinking the same
thing.
We're
taking a small little bright spot of social media and amplifying it because there's a lot of negative there.
We were talking this week how like when things blow up on social media, it's almost always because of conflict, you know?
It loves, and our group, the channels love, right? Like as soon as they sense that something's like divisive or conflict-based, it's like, oh, your numbers just start racking up. It's so terrible.
Well, I had a couple like social media posts get really big the last few weeks, which I'm not even bragging about because it's like there's part of me that doesn't even like it.
Not the goal.
like that weird person that's like, I hope this post doesn't get too big.
No, you actually don't want to go. A lot of people don't want to go viral because you get people that shouldn't be on your platforms then on your platform.
Right. Like you end up in people's like feeds that don't follow you and then they like leave mean, nasty comments.
But ruins the vibe.
We've been drama free in the RV Atlas group for years now. And some posts still do get really big, but it's never because people are arguing. It's because people have like a lot of answers and people start talking and having, oh my God, conversations. People are being social, answering questions. And so this is one of my favorite ones we've done, the one we're about to do. We're going to tackle three questions today, and we're going to get a lot of help from people in our group that answered these questions. So somebody asked where everyone was camping for the solar eclipse. And the answers were just really interesting for me to see where like 40 or 50 different people are camping and how they're doing it. And it says a lot about RVing because there's just lots of different ways that people are doing this. So we'll talk about that. Then somebody asked about camping meals for families. And somehow or another, the RV Atlas group, people are into camp food, which is great because it's one of my hobbies. Anytime people ask for like recipe ideas or food ideas, there's always so many cool responses. Did you get a chance to even see that post yet or look at all those cool responses?
Yeah, that post didn't like some posts don't naturally show up in my feed. So I didn't see it, but that's interesting because I want to go through and look at it because I actually like a lot of like camping meal recommendations sometimes for the house at this time of year, like spring, summer. So I've been like looking for those kinds of easy.
Well, and tell everybody why.
Well, because in the spring, there's no schedule with spring sports. That's what happens is baseball and soccer do this funny thing where we some nights between the three boys will be at the baseball field from like five, really like the first kid has to get dropped off at 4:30 for a rec game or whatever, to after 9 o'clock at night if you have the late game. So it's just impossible to run any sort of like regular dinner schedule at home during the spring. And then what happens is if you're not ready with something, it's snack bar or Pizza Express, which is right by the baseball field.
And sort of, I mean, both of those options are not your favorites. Like that snack bar type dinner where like our two 14-year-olds start making their own chicken nuggets in the air fryer and stuff. Like, God bless them that they're like making their own food, but they just, the kitchen explodes. And I know that so many people out there with teenagers feel us on this. And then still, I feel like our family is still trying to rein in the takeout food thing that just happened during the pandemic for so many people, where it's like, yeah, we're eating out three nights a week. And it's like, why are we doing that? It's so expensive.
It's so expensive. Yeah. I honestly, food cost, like, I'd rather pay. I know everybody complains about the cost of groceries these days, but I really think the problem is the price of prepared foods is just bonkers. I mean, maybe it's more, you're more sensitive to it as a family of five, but it is crazy that now for a quick takeout meal, we pay what we used to pay to sit down in a restaurant with tip, everything.
$80, whatever. So yeah, so a lot of these camping meals that people talked about will work really, really well at home. Not all of them, but we'll talk about a bunch of them. And actually, you put in some recipes for camping.
I should do walking tacos at home. Give me a break. I really should.
Why not? I mean, the kids like them.
Game nights. I know.
It's a great idea. So, and in the new budget camping book that comes out April 2nd, you actually put in some recipes for like easy budget camping meals. So we'll talk about that. Then also, someone asked the group about free overnight camping, like on the way from like Ohio to Myrtle Beach, right? Just that idea of that like north to south trip and where can I stay halfway for free? And she was worried it would be too hot staying at, I believe she said, a Cracker Barrel. And while I'm not going to give recommendations for where she should stay on that particular route, the answers are very interesting in terms of like, what are your options for a one night RV stop on a longer trip? And, you know, there's a bunch of options and it's kind of hard to figure out what to do, particularly if you're newer to RVing.
Well, there's so no one answer. We can walk through it because it's really going to depend on you. It's going to depend on your preferences and your budget. And, you know, we can talk through all of those because there really isn't, like, somebody can't answer that question for you. They can give you advice and we can give advice and say, consider this and that. But like, you're really going to have to figure out what works for you.
But her question led into a back and forth that I had with her, a friendly exchange.
Yeah.
That kind of ties into the whole budget camping thing, which is like, it's kind of like the year of budget camping for us with this book coming out. And I'm just really curious and not genuinely curious, not critical. I'm genuinely curious about prices, the prices people are finding at campgrounds, whether they think they're getting a value, whether things are still overpriced. So we're going to get into all this stuff. So we're going to dive into those three questions. But before we do so, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Camco. Camco is one of our favorite companies in the outdoor recreation industry. For more than 50 years, they have remained a trusted North Carolina-based manufacturer specializing in innovative products for the RV, marine, outdoor living, and outdoor recreation markets. You may know them best by their American-made Rhino sewer hoses, Taste Pure water filters, EvoFlex drinking water hoses, and TST toilet chemicals. But their lineup of products doesn't end there. Camco continues to deliver products that bridge the gap between you and your next great adventure. From portable grills and campfires to ease lift hitches and power grip electrical adapters, they seem to be doing it all. There's a saying that if you own an RV, you are sure to own a Camco product or two. And it's true. We still use Camco products that we bought 12 years ago when we started RVing. This year, we are stocking up our new RV with go-to Camco products like their collapsible laundry basket and their Life is Better at the Campsite dishes and mugs. Head to CamcoOutdoors.com to check out all of the cool stuff that Camco makes and get 10% off your entire order with our discount code RVATLAS10. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are tackling three questions from the RV Atlas group on Facebook. And if you're not a member of the RV Atlas group on Facebook, it's a private group, but we would love to have you as long as you're not cranky, as long as you're not a keyboard commando.
And you're trying to sell something for crying all night. That's a popular one.
That's been happening. But one of the questions to get into the group was, are you cranky or are you a keyboard commando? And I was like, some people are misunderstanding the question and thinking that they had to be one or the other. So people are like, I'm a keyboard commando. And I realized that, like,
you need to rephrase.
I actually went back in and edited it. I said, are you cranky or are you a keyboard commando? If so, you will not be allowed in our group. So I clarified. But anyway, we'd love to have you in the group. So let's tackle this first question. Ann DeSantis wrote a very simple question. Hi, everyone. Where are you camping to see the eclipse? And of course, for so many RVers, not just RVers, but for Americans, this is just a really exciting event. Now, for RVers, there are so many options. And look, in the north, though, it could still be really cold. So I'm genuinely curious.
It's very early, yeah. Yeah, it's early.
Very early.
And some northern campgrounds are opening early normally would, in order to accommodate the demand. But in general, the whole path of totality that kind of passes through New York State and north, those campgrounds would not typically be open at that time of year.
But for the revenue, they're opening earlier than they normally would. So Arthur Dando answered, and he said, Buffalo, Watertown, or Northern Vermont. I have people midway to each where we can overnight. Which one will depend on the weather? Mm. This is such a great thing about RVing. Like, this guy is literally saying, I have three options. I'm going to wait and see where the weather's probably the most clear or where the weather's best. And then I'm going to dart and be spontaneous in my RV. Now, a lot of longtime RVers have said, oh, you can't be spontaneous in an RV anymore. You have to book ahead, blah, blah, blah. But this guy's talking like driveway surfing.
Yeah, he's mooch docking. Like, yeah.
He's a mooch docker. He's going to mooch dock.
The weather is looking sketchy. So this guy's smart. Yeah, already they're starting with the predictions, you know, of percentage chances and everything. And it looks sad for some places. And
I hope that changes. I hope it changes.
I do too. I really hope. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. I hope it changes.
It would bum a lot of people. We'll cheer you all up afterwards on the podcast.
It's terrible timing for us, by the way, because it's just 2 days after our spring break with our kids. So it's back to school for them. So it like was so close to aligning with the time that we could have gone somewhere to see it. But then with them all having to be back in school and having just had a week off, it doesn't work for us to get away somewhere. That's sad.
There's enough crazy stuff happening in our house every night that I don't really need a big celestial event to make my life interesting.
Every night we say, what's going on with the moon? All right.
No, a lot of people like Arthur were mooch docking, right? Yeah. So that's one thing that is cool about RVing, and that a lot of people in our group are just like taking their RVs to a friend's property that's, close to the path of totality.
Or if not a friend, you use Boondockers Welcome or like Hip Camp has a lot of private individual properties. So they're going to be open.
Harvest Host wants you to try them.
Yeah, exactly. Harvest Host is a good option.
Kelly and Elizabeth both said my house. Well, they're lucky. Separate houses. And I think a lot of people are doing camp driveway. Like if you live somewhere good, I think a lot of people are actually going to use their travel trailers and their motorhomes and kind of camp out and make a night of it in camp driveway. And look, our RV gets a lot of use in camp driveway. It's another cool thing about RVs is that you can kind of go out and have a fun night camping right in your own driveway. So a lot of people are doing that. Now, Stephanie, I didn't tell you I was going to read this. Now, Deborah answered and said, I have campsites available in Kenton, Ohio. Call me for a reservation. Should I give her number?
No, don't put her number on here. I don't know.
Right, well, if you
it
go
was
into
in a
the
private
group.
Facebook group. Don't put it in a public podcast. Okay. But there's her number that she put in the private Facebook group.
Listen, this brings up a great point. There are a lot of people renting out their own property.
Well, that's
there are
hip
a lot
camp.
Of people being entrepreneurial or using hip camp or just friends and,
it's
extended
like
family
it's
or
like
whatever.
It's like Airbnb, kind of. Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
it's,
I wonder if people are charging their own relatives.
We just use all of our space, but we could do it with our hookups and our close proximity to the Jersey Shore. But
we could totally
rent the side of the house probably straight through the summer. And
if we made a hip campsite, we have 30 amp, we have water. It would be booked all summer long, and then our neighbors would call the police. Like, it would totally be an issue.
Yeah, we have nice neighbors. I don't think they'd call the police. But
well, we have had friends stay in our driveway. Okay, so our friend Shire, who was in my Six Things I Love About My RV show a few years back, super nice family, Niagara Falls. can't wait. So hope you get good weather there, Shire, and hope you enjoy the falls. But
that's
again,
that's where, you know, I was thinking of going if we could have made it work schedule wise. Niagara Falls was the easiest
really
for us to
cold.
Get to. Oh, yeah, but that's okay.
The falls
You're looking
are beautiful.
Up at the sky. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, no matter what. Cindy wrote in and said, we rented a cabin near Geneva on the Lake, Ohio. And Cindy, I believe, is a hybrid travel trailer owner. So I don't know that she was thinking this, but maybe it's just a little too chilly to take the hybrid out, but wanted to have the experience and rented a cabin. I wonder, Stephanie, do you think a lot of RV owners, because of the chance of it being cold in the northern parts of the country, are traveling for this but not using their RVs?
I mean, maybe. That's what, you know, to me, that was an option a year ago when I started to think about it, because I was thinking, well, we might have to get somewhere quick. We might not, like, we didn't know the school schedule yet. So I was definitely kind of exploring all my options, I'm sure. I mean, for some people, it might be just really quick, you know, Zoom to the path of totality and having to get back home, you know, who knows?
You've said for years that RVers love to travel, and most of them travel in different ways. Now, you don't see that in, like, the full-time RVers and the content they all do on YouTube and whatnot. But I think that in, you know, like, our audience and people that own RVs and use them recreationally, I think a lot of those people travel in lots of different ways over the course of the year. That's always been our intuition.
It's not just an intuition. People talk about this in our group all the time. Like, people will be like, oh, who goes on cruises too? Whenever somebody asks that, everybody is. I mean, it's definitely the fact that most RVers do other types of vacations. So, you know, it's like it's usually the smaller group, but the very loud group that's like, if I own an RV, I only travel in my RV, which is why we tell people to be so careful about their spending on their rig. Because, you know, some people start to feel like, oh, I spend so much on my RV, I can't go and spend the night in a cabin because I have to make this valuable, you know? And it's like, you don't want to spend too much that you can't take other kinds of vacations that make sense at the time. Like for us, where we fly and rent or fly and stay in cabins or fly and stay in glamping accommodations. We love that, you know? So we definitely want to have a rig that makes that make sense.
Yeah, it's true. And we you know, we've never... You know, the most expensive RV we ever bought topped out at around 40K, which I know for a lot of people, well, that's expensive, but in the grand scheme of RVs, it's not. Now, Justin is staying at the Jellystone near Akron, Ohio. Don't know if they still have sites there.
Okay, so I guess
there.
They're open. Cool.
Yeah. Nice. I'm guessing, like you said, that they are opening for this.
100%. I doubt Akron is normally open in early April, Jellystone Akron, but who knows? Yeah.
I wouldn't think so. Marianne says, Ohio. I got a site at FMCA headquarters, which is the Family Motor Coach Association.
Yeah, they have a little campground there that people can stay at. Nice.
And plan to drive where it will be total.
Oh, okay.
And so I think a lot of people are doing that, where they are taking their RVs and then they're going to day trip to somewhere to get closer to the path of totality, to a state park or whatever, because it's not like there's campgrounds every step of the way along the path of totality. So I've heard that from a few people. Melissa said a COE near Little Rock, Arkansas, Corps of Engineers. I bet you those sites are impossible to book now.
Yeah.
Because they're like probably $20
a night. You had to be on it before all of the press about the, like I said, I was looking last April at the Niagara Falls area. And, you know, like, I don't think that the media had quite picked up on the hype yet. So for people that were ahead of the game, they probably snagged some good stuff like that.
Oh, and they're all feeling so smart sitting in their camp chairs at the Corps of Engineers for $20 a night. Muriel said Wilson H. Fox Lake in Granger, Texas, also a COE campground. So, yeah, I mean, if you were like a reservations ninja and you were on top of this, some people probably found some awesome spots. And
yeah. So now we're just keeping our fingers crossed for the weather for them.
And please post pictures. Anyone listening, you know, if you're taking the RV out for the eclipse, please post pictures in the group. I would really just love to see how it panned out for not necessarily pictures of the eclipse itself, but just, you know, post pictures from the trip and let us know how it went. We had so many people say they were camping in Texas. And that reminded me that we have a lot of listeners in Texas and California, Texas, and Florida are our three biggest states in terms of people who listen to the podcast. And just giving everyone from Texas a shout out. Thank you so much for listening. We loved our trip to Texas. We really need to get back to Texas. Okay. Like, and we do have some Texas content planned for this summer. Okay. So we do have some campground reviews from Texas this summer with a correspondent, hopefully. So if you're listening from Texas, we got you covered. All right. We're going to come back in a second. We're going to talk about easy camping meals for families. Not necessarily all of them are easy, but most of them fell into that category. But first, we have sponsored messages from our friends at Harvest Hosts and from our friends at Go RVing. With overnight RV camping at over 5,099 farms, wineries, breweries, attractions, and more, Harvest Hosts is America's largest and most fun RV camping membership program. And because it only costs $99 per year, a Harvest Host membership is also an incredible value. Members with self-contained RVs can enjoy a wine tasting, feed alpacas, purchase some fresh farm produce, and more, all while enjoying an unforgettable overnight stay. Spend the night at a museum, wake up to beautiful vineyards, visit unique attractions, or enjoy a local brewery. With thousands of locations, there is something for everyone to enjoy, all with no camping fees. In return, members are asked to support their hosts by purchasing one of their local products with each stay. Looking for a last-minute booking for the solar eclipse in April? Harvest Hosts opens reservations 90 days in advance and is a great option for those looking for a stellar experience. Visit harvesthosts.com and use promo code ECLIPSE24 to save 20% off of your annual membership today. That's harvesthosts.com and promo code ECLIPSE24 to save 20% off on your annual membership today. GoRVing's website, GoRVing.com, is a one-stop resource packed with all of the information you need about every aspect of the RV lifestyle, from RV shopping to trip planning, with expert advice on everything in between. GoRVing.com is packed with incredible stories and tips and tricks that will inspire you to get the most out of your RV and enjoy every second of life at the campground or somewhere far off grid. Click on GoRVing's This Is RVing tab to start your journey and hit the open road. Want to learn more about the different types of RVs? Click on GoRVing's Explore RVs tab to learn more about towable RVs like travel trailers and fifth wheels, and motorized RVs like camper vans or Class A or C motorhomes. If you still need help finding the right RV, GoRVing.com has a fun quiz that will offer you a personalized recommendation based on your family size, your budget, and what kind of adventures you are seeking out in your first or next RV. To find out more about RVing or to find a dealer or a campground near you, head on over to GoRVing.com. That's GoRVing.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Now let's talk about easy camping meals. You know, I think a lot of people get sick of the same old, you know, burgers, dogs, and at the beginning of the camping season, like, well, what else can I do this year? You know, what else can I make on my Weber grill or my Blackstone griddle or my crock pot or my Lodge cast iron or whatever it is? So Stacy wrote in and said, families with kids, what are your favorite camping meals? We are doing our longest trip of 7 days, staying in one location. I searched and found the Omnia, but don't know if it'll make it in time. So she got one of the free Omnias that we've been giving away. Otherwise, have griddle, stove, oven, and microwave. Youngest kids would be happy with chicken nuggets and mac and cheese daily, and we've got one of those. Mm. So Stephanie, what do you, I mean, you're good at variety, and you do a lot of different things, both at home and when we're camping. We don't see the same things too many times. In fact, we often have to say, hey, can you make the chili again? You know? So what are, and you put some camping recipes in the book. So what are some of your favorites beyond the obvious for campground meals for families?
Well, these are the ones in the book. It's not that they're not obvious, but some of the, like, the oldies are goodies, right? Like, so I kind of went back to thinking about when we were originally traveling for longer periods of time with the little kids in the summer, one of the reasons why we could do that was because we were almost keeping a lot of parts of our budget the exact same as when we would be at home. And food was one of those things. We basically operated like, okay, we would normally spend this much on groceries and maybe this much on pizza night and this much on one night meal out a week or whatever. And we transferred that to our camping trips to keep our food budget pretty much the same. And that allowed us to do a lot more camping and to have longer trips that didn't break the bank. So I was thinking back to some things that had been in rotation back then for the budget camping book. And of course, some of them are, you know, you always think if you've been around the camping groups for a long time and you're like, oh, walking tacos. Yeah, everybody knows that. But the funny thing is every time somebody says walking tacos, somebody in the group says, what's that? You know, because it is new to people sometimes. And I felt like this book would probably be in front of people that haven't maybe been in RVing groups and been in camping groups for a long time. And they are new to the thing. So I didn't want to say, oh, everybody knows that about that kind of stuff. So walking tacos is a hit. And the funny thing is, it's not just a hit with kids at the campground. Like, you know, I was working like the wrestling snack stand this winter and we did walking tacos.
The kids love them.
Every kid from all the different towns for all the different wrestling tournaments, the walking tacos were the hit and kids would come back for more. Another bag of walking tacos. And you can do the meat in a crock pot if you want. You can do it on the griddle. You can do it on the stove, right? So, or you can do it ahead like a lot of people do and just double it one night when you're doing tacos, put it in a Ziploc bag in the freezer, and now you have meat for when you go.
And just throw it on the Blackstone or something.
So it's like,
and
you right. get there. So you can do it any way you want. And what, you know, fit it into your lifestyle, which I like. And then also I put, this is very controversial, I put black beans in my taco meat because I'm always looking to get more bang. Beans are a great way to get more bang for your buck, people. My kids happen to love it, I think, because I've been doing it.
But they don't feel like they're shortchanged by you putting the black beans in. Wesley, the other night I went to make tacos and Wesley's like, where are the black beans? I'm like, sorry, dude, we're out.
And he's picky, but that's just how they've eaten it all their life. Because I'm like, you can, you know, double, but you know, the amount that you're serving your kids who are volume, my kids are volume eaters, by using that protein and that beans, and it's cheap, right? So, you know, yeah, I think that that's a great direction to go. But some other things that, again, not new
and
campers.
Can I say one more thing? Yeah. Can I just quickly say, and walking tacos can be customized any different way. You could do an adult version that's spicier and a kid version that's more basic. I mean, there's
right,
100 ways you can do it.
Right, you have jalapenos for people that want a little extra kick to them. For the, you know, somebody else can leave off the sour cream, put on the cheese, whatever, right? So you just put out your little fix-ins and everybody can add what they want. And then they walk away with their little bag of Fritos or Doritos or whatever you like to use. And your fork, and it's great. And it's easy to clean up because they just throw it in the garbage. Another thing like that was foil packets, which again, not rocket science, not something that I thought of myself, but I do think that having that as an idea, like when you just put these really simple ingredients, like meat and vegetables and potatoes into a foil packet and you put them over the campfire, kids love it. Again, easy to feed the picky eaters because you can keep out anything that they're not going to eat. You can add more vegetables to the older, you know, kids' foil packets and maybe leave them out of a younger, pickier eater. So, you know, just some simple foil packet recipes were in there.
And you could also, can I say this? I'm honestly asking you, like, we have always done foil packets over the fire, but say it's a Friday night meal and you don't want to futz with getting the fire all set up, you could throw them over a grill. Just as easily.
Just close
I wouldn't
it.
Throw them on a griddle, but I would throw them on a grill.
Sure. And you just close it so you can get some of that steam going on in there maybe and keep, you know, move it along a little bit faster. Put one of those vegetable, like, you know, those disposable pans. I would put like a vegetable disposable pan underneath just in case anything drips out or whatever. I always get the extra strength. Foil, the heavy duty foil for camping. Just FYI, do not use your regular foil if you're cooking over the fire for anything. And breakfast burritos was a very popular one when the boys were young. And I actually made these ahead of time. Again, you don't have to, but I would make like when we were going on a week long camping trip, I would make like 20 of these and I'd line up the tortillas in the house and I'd make tons of scrambled eggs. And again, like ground beef and you can use your leftover taco meat, right? For beans and everything. Put that all in there. And then I would wrap them up, freeze them in parchment paper. So it doesn't stick, right? And then I'd store them all in Ziploc baggies, freeze them. And then we could microwave them for like a minute. to cook and use some sour cream and salsa.
And they were good.
Or you could grill them, you know? And the boy, that was such an easy breakfast if we were going on an early morning hike or something like that. So that was a big go-to. And now, and you know, we can't get the boys out of bed that early.
And you did not make big, gigantic, heavy breakfast burritos. You made them sort of reasonably sized, because we were always like, particularly when the kids were younger, we were always like, we don't want to load them up on too much breakfast and be like, let's go for a hike. You know, we were always keeping breakfast a little bit on the mellower side. So your make ahead burritos were always like just the right size for the kids.
Yeah, I guess they could have had big, gigantic, like they will eat them at campgrounds that have had great breakfast, big, gigantic, great breakfast burritos. That is a favorite of theirs. So they'll take a big, hearty breakfast if you
Sandy
give them one.
Pines,
but I'm
Maine.
Not a big breakfast person. I was thinking of also
Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Odell Lake, Oregon.
Odell Lake.
Highway West Vacations.
Yeah.
Those breakfast burritos
Epic
were dreamy.
Breakfast burritos. And then the other one that I was thinking was Under Canvas in Yellowstone. Do you remember the restaurant that was at that Under Canvas? Their breakfast, and they had breakfast bowls too, were like delicious.
The breakfast at Under delicious. Canvas Yellowstone mm-hmm. was awesome. It was not a huge menu.
Hearty, yeah.
It was hearty, it was awesome, it was delicious. And considering that Under Canvas Yellowstone was really expensive, breakfast at Under Canvas Yellowstone
yeah.
was not really expensive.
That was our favorite meal at that restaurant for sure. And we did have like lunch and dinner there, I think at different days, but the breakfast was definitely our favorite. Other basics that we put in the book, Dutch oven pizza. There are so many different ways that people do pizza now. So I think that yes. has been a newer thing to do all like, you know, to do pizza on the Blackstone or pizza, the Oni pizza ovens. And like, so it's kind of become a little bit of a thing. But I feel like when the boys were little, yes, some people did grill pizza, but for the most part, it wasn't a big campground thing. But it was fun to do Dutch oven pizza, right? To do that over the fire, not hard. You do your little dough first and just give it a turn in there so it gets a little more cooked. Put on whatever toppings you want, put the cover on and just steam it and melt the cheese and everything. Really super easy, fun thing for kids to have over the fire. I would recommend to this person who's asking about a week, I would recommend thinking through different kinds of meals. Like, do not plan to cook over the campfire every night, right? But maybe one meal that's like that would be fun for the kids. And keep it
Saturday
easy for yourself.
Night.
Even if it's a hot dog roast, kids love that. And our kids always loved having a night of hot dogs over the campfire. So like, think one night of that. Don't overdo it for yourself, right? But then maybe think of one night that you're not really going to want to cook. You're going to be out all day. Who knows? I would double something that I was making at home before in a casserole and just shove it in the refrigerator or the freezer for that trip. So like maybe one night like that. And then one night it's burgers on the Blackstone, smash burgers. And then another night it's walking tacos. So like, think about different kinds of meals for different kinds of camp days. Keep it easy. You can still have fun camping meals and not make your entire vacation cooking.
And Jess Deck is on the same wavelength as you.
Yeah.
And I think this is pivotal in terms of if you can make extra stuff during the week and leftovers yeah. are part of the ingredients, make your weekend camping meals easier. Man, that is the way to go. It just requires a little forethought. So Jess wrote in and said, the 2 weeks before a long trip, I'll make double batches mm-hmm. of something we love and the freeze it chicken noodle soup or the base and add noodles later, lasagna, et cetera, bring pizza dough for quick toaster oven pizzas. So she completely agrees.
That's
with
what
you.
I did for years. It would be chili and I double batch it. White chicken chili does well in the crock pot. Double batch it. It's amazing.
And why haven't you made that? In months, we love your white chili.
Oh my goodness. All right.
We love your white chili. I know you're
put
busy.
In a request.
I do. I want to put in a request. And I always think it's cute. Jess Deck has been a member of our group for a long time. She was on Six Things I Love About My RV. Her dad is also in the group. And he responded. Mark responded. Dutch oven Denty Moore beef stew with biscuits on top. Bake on coals with some on the lid. Ends up like beef pot pie.
Ooh.
Sounds really good to me. I love so many of the ideas in the group. You touched on a lot of them. Shire said, if you have a Trader Joe's near you, mm-hmm. I'd like to bring some of their frozen Kung Pao chicken. Yep. The That's orange chicken is good too.
Yep.
The orange chicken's good.
Yeah. For an easy dinner, you do rice and you do the orange chicken and I throw in some like green beans or something so that there's a vegetable involved. And it's super, it's like, takeout. It's takeout from your freezer for sure.
Shire says it's not campy, but honestly, sometimes I just don't want to cook. Yep. And this is like takeout. Super easy over some rice. Like you said, no prep except getting up to Trader Joe's before the trip.
This is so important that people not feel like they have to be like a camp. I used to say this all the time. You do not have to be a Pinterest board at the campground. You don't have to be like, that's not a camp meal. Do your camping. Do whatever you want. Do what makes that you happy.
What you're talking about, that kind of like Instagrammable camp meal or that Pinterest camp meal. We've been 15 years of steady camping, RVing in RVs, in tents, at glamp grounds. I don't think I've ever seen someone actually cooking that way.
Yeah, I don't know. You know who it's hard work for?
Not me.
In general, the moms.
Yeah.
You know, they need a vacation. And then don't at me, all you dads that cook out there. I know a lot of you do cook, but we can all admit that for the most part, it's going to fall on the moms to do this like over the top meal prep kind of a thing. So it honestly can make it less fun and feel like more work and less relaxing. So don't do that. Do what you want. Unless you love it. If it's your happy place, great. That's awesome.
And look, yum. You did so much camp cooking for a decade. And now on recent RV trips, it has been like, I want to eat out. You know, like I want to go out and try some local food. No, you just cook more
because you'll do the, yeah.
I've been cooking now it's more too.
Now I tell you what to do. On the Blackstone, be like, make this.
And I like that. I like that. And I actually appreciate that because otherwise I could fall into like the same thing, like smash burgers and pancakes.
Yeah.
And you're like, do easy quesadillas, you know, mm-hmm. and everyone loves them and they're easy to make and they're crowd pleasers because we're often camping with other people these days. Hannah said grilled Reubens, which is so funny because I have been developing my Camp Reuben recipe. And those are so easy to do on the Blackstone. They come out great. It feels like a fancy restaurant sandwich, but it's kind of a piece of cake to make. She said grilled Reubens or Rachel's. Stephanie, I meant to look that up before we hit record.
I have no idea what that is. Somebody's is it a typo?
No, I think it's probably like thing? I think it's like a Roy Rogers or a Mickey Mantle. It's like a variation of something similar. I'm going to have to look that up after the show. If you know a grilled Rachel is, let me know. Fajitas, buffalo chicken sliders, breakfast for dinner, like French toast, lots of snacks.
I have it. Do you want to know what it is?
Yeah, you looked it up that quickly?
Yeah, it's amazing what Google can do for you. This is so funny because this is actually your favorite.
Tell me.
You don't know what you like?
It's with turkey.
Yes, it's what you order. It is a turkey Swiss and coleslaw sandwich, which is basically a turkey Reuben, which is what you order. You prefer that over a pastrami in general.
Well, actually, around here,
you love ordering a turkey Reuben.
No, but you can get a turkey Reuben around here.
That's what they call
Russian
it. But
dressing,
apparently,
sauerkraut.
No, it says that's exactly
I know
homemade Thousand Island dressing. Delectable turkey Swiss and coleslaw with homemade Thousand Island dressing. That is what you order when you say a turkey Reuben.
Not exactly. There's two different things here.
Rachel sandwich, a close cousin to the Reuben.
But you can add, okay, look, I've had both. I've had exactly what you just described.
All right.
And then I've also had a turkey Reuben, which has sauerkraut and Russian dressing on rye.
All
so
right.
They're a little different.
Just the nuances. Stephanie, did you know? Rachel, I just learned something new. I've never heard of that. I wonder what region of the, it has to be a region of the country because I've never heard of that before.
Stephanie, let me put you on the spot because I've been doing a little Google research on this. What kind of meat do you put on a Reuben?
Pastrami.
That's what I said.
What?
When you order, we're in New Jersey, and I swear to you, every single time I have ever ordered a Reuben in New York or New Jersey, it's pastrami.
Yeah.
I went online looking for Reuben recipes, and almost every single one of them called for corned beef.
Corned beef, yeah, I don't know.
So apparently, it's a New York thing
to use pastrami on a Reuben.
And it's like a rest of the country thing to use corned beef. So I'm going to make them both.
Well,
and
yeah.
Decide which I mean, like better.
Yeah, you do some blind taste testing. I don't know. Yeah, it's not going to, like, whatever. It's fine. But yes, we're big pastrami people in this region of the country. We have our Jewish delis, you know, that we all grow up with.
So good. And
yes. So getting your pastrami on rye bread, very, very key around here.
Okay, we're going to come back in a second. We're going to talk about free overnight camping. Like, what are options for free and cheap overnight camping? Are there options for cheap overnight camping when you're going on a long trip and you need to rest for the night and break the drive in half? But before we talk about that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Go Power. Go Power has been the industry leader for mobile solar solutions since 1996. From their beginnings as a small Canadian distributor of solar energy products, GoPower has grown to become one of North America's leading suppliers of recreational and business solar solutions. Their high-quality solar panels, inverters, controllers, and batteries offer a durable, dependable, and cost-effective solution for your mobile power needs when you are camping without hookups or boondocking far off-grid. We have had GoPower solar systems on two of our RVs, and they have been absolute game changers for us. They allow us to boondock, dry camp, and driveway surf, and still charge our devices at night and make coffee in the morning. GoPower not only makes the best equipment, they also offer the best support. The support section on GoPower's website offers technical support, installation assistance, and answers to FAQs. There has never been a better time to add a GoPower solar system to your RV and hit the open road. And with over 1 million solar panels sold and 28 years of experience, GoPower is the brand to trust for your mobile power needs. To find out more, follow them on Instagram at GoPowerSolar and head on over to their website at GoPowerSolar.com. That's GoPowerSolar.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I am here with Stephanie, and we are now going to tackle a question about free or budget-friendly overnight camping on longer RV trips. So Emily wrote in and said, talk to me about free camping along route in the summer. And that's key, in the summer. We're headed to Myrtle Beach and would like to split the drive into 2 days. I believe she's coming from Ohio. Easiest and cheapest would be to stay in a Cracker Barrel parking lot. However, it will be July in the South. No electric hookups equals no air conditioning. I'm thinking that will be a no-go. What do you all do? Mm. And a bunch of people, and I agree, were like, no, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that because we have done that. And it was uncomfortable and nobody slept well.
Of course. Right. So here, this is just a classic case of you can't have everything. Right. So, and that's the case with this lovely idea that a lot of people like to talk about like sometimes called Wally docking, because it started very much with people staying in Walmart parking lots overnight. You know, you're not camping there. You're not getting out your chairs. You're not nothing. It's just like those trips where you're trying to cover a lot of room. You know that you're pulling in late at 10 o'clock at night. You're going to leave at 6 o'clock in the morning. And it's like painful to think about spending the money on a campsite when you're not even going to barely see the campground, right? You're going to pull in late. You're going to leave early.
That's a big part of Emily's point.
Yes.
As people started going back and forth with her in a nice way, she kept saying, I just don't want to spend a lot because we're literally pulling into sleep.
Yeah. Emily, we get that because we live on the I-95 corridor, right? And so many of our vacations are about trying to get past that DC area down south or whatever. There's a stopover and it's not like any of these places you want to like stop for a while or explore. We know all these areas. We just want to stop overnight quickly to get to the next place. So we've been, you know, going through that struggle for years where you go, it's just going to be short. I don't want to spend money. But you can't say, I don't want to spend money, but I want all the creature comforts of the campground.
She wants electric, but it's okay. But maybe a lot of places are going to have full hookups or nothing. Electric costs money.
Electric costs money. And there are, we'll give you some hint. So here's the thing. the cheapest option is not going to be the most comfortable option. The cheapest option is going to be staying in a Cracker Barrel or a Walmart or any of those places that are free overnight camping in a parking lot somewhere. And it's going to be free and it's going to be uncomfortable. And at a certain point, we made the decision that free wasn't worth it.
We never, I'm just going to be really honest, we never had a comfortable night at a Walmart. And it was one time because of the heat, another time because of the noise.
Security. One time I thought it was sketch and we were a little like,
I remember I was so hot that I slept on the floor trying to get some coolness off the floor. And those were always on trips down south, always on trips to North or South Carolina where it was 12 hours and we didn't want to do the whole thing. Now, when we stayed at Cabela's in Maine, where it was June, I think, on our way to Nova Scotia, the temperatures were very comfortable and we had a really nice night's sleep. Mm-hmm. And that Cabela's parking lot in Maine, I hope they still,
you have to check yourself. We're not saying that we know that you can still camp there because a lot of places have put the kibosh. That's another thing is you have to be careful. A lot of places have put the kibosh on this. So.
Well, local campgrounds often complain to municipalities and say you're taking away revenue from us. But I got into a back and forth with Emily and my first thought was, oh, try a KOA.
Yeah.
Because the KOA system was largely developed, and I'm talking about back in the 60s and 70s, it's evolved mightily. But a lot of those were set up as roadside stops for people going to bigger destinations. And I just figured, oh, there's got to be a KOA on the way. And you'll get your electricity and you'll have a playground and a pool, which she said she didn't care about the playground and the pool. But she said, oh, yeah, that's a good idea, but I don't want to spend $100 a night. And I was like, really? It's $100? It's $100 for one night at a KOA just along the roadside? And she said, well, actually, it's $80, but that's without the taxes and the fees. So approaching $100.
Yeah.
So
that's not probably a journey, right? So that's the nice thing of it. And KOA, I would take out the app and I'd look at my route. Because I've done this, like when I went all the way down to Florida and back by myself, I needed to stay overnight in some place that I knew was safe and also that was really close to the highway. And on both stops down and both stops up, not both. It was one KOA each because I also stayed at another stop that we know very well and that we like and that isn't a KOA. But I felt like I would go along my route and I would look for the journeys because they're more affordable in that oftentimes in that 50 and 60 range.
That's what I was thinking.
But, you know, whether or not you can find that along your particular route, you're right. $50, $60 for an overnight stop. It's not cheap. It's not free. But if you're able to use your electric, to use your water, to have a shower in the morning, like we got to the point where we had done all of the different things enough times that I said, okay, take my money. Here's $60 because we all get a good night's sleep.
Here's my question, though. And I mean this honestly, like as a question. She's not going to stay at that KOA. Now, is that KOA going to be, and it's a Sunday night, is that KOA going to be full and they don't need her to stay? Or are they missing out on getting somebody that would spend 60?
Well, see, so isn't that the whole idea behind places like Spot Tonight, these newer OTAs that are trying to help people locate those open campgrounds that are still available at a more affordable dynamic pricing model, right? So that I'm looking around and I'm saying, oh, I can stay here and this is an empty. I think that that's the idea behind things like Spot Tonight.
Yeah, well, somebody else said, what about Loves? And I'm really interested at like what Loves is doing and I'd like to stay at a Loves overnight and get a feel for it. And she was like, okay, maybe that's an option. What's the price range?
Yeah.
Ed Pippin responded and said that he's seeing it from $32 to $47.
Yes, that sounds right to me, what I've seen.
And that's with hookups. And I don't know that it's... Well, and Emily responded and said, that seems obscene for a parking lot.
Well, it's not a parking lot. They're actually these... I mean, yes, it's next to it. That's the whole point, is that it's really convenient right by the highway at a service center with gas and food and everything. So that's supposed to be a pro, not a con, right? And if you look at it as a con, you shouldn't stay there. But like they have these concrete pads and like actual little camp, like it's, you know.
And security.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
You're so paying. Think about all of that you're paying for. Yeah.
Emily, if you're listening, I agree that 100 a night's expensive for a KOA on a Sunday night.
I wouldn't spend it. We would never spend 100 for a quick overnight.
I do think I kind of disagree that 32 to 47 is obscene for Loves, because I just don't think that they would do it for less. I don't think it's economically worth it for them to be charging $20 a night. I just don't think that's a model. Well, you're using,
think about
sense.
Utilities of electric, water, security, access to all of those resources that you can have. And they can rent it to a trucker instead, right? Like, that's their other option, is that they have the economics of trucking. Right, that they're working against also. So I think it's, you know, another option is, of course, to get Harvest Host. And if there's a place along your route, but you're still not going to have electric, so that's still going to be dry camping. I think here's the bottom line. Camping is more affordable, but you don't get it for free. In other words, you don't get electric and water and sewer for free.
Or for $20, though.
Only if it's subsidized, right? By our public park system.
And some people said,
the reason why that is so cheap is because people's tax dollars are paying for that. It's the market. That's not the market at work. If the market's at work, it's not $20.
Well, and also somebody said, we'll find a Corps of Engineers because they are like $20. Yeah. But the thing is, they're not built along the interstates. No. They're often really out in the middle of nowhere along some reservoir.
Early on
in
our traveling, sometimes you would pick a campground that you wanted to go to, and I would get like livid because it would be 9 o'clock at night. We'd be like having driven for hours that day, and we would be going miles and miles off of the interstate. And I'd be like, no, like,
I remember the exact night. We stayed at the Staunton, what was at the time, the Staunton Walnut Hills KOA.
Oh my gosh. Twisty. And I thought,
oh, it looked so pretty.
So pretty.
But 10 o'clock at night, twisty, turny. Yeah. And I hope I'm not getting this wrong, I think it was like 20 minutes off the interstate. So yeah I mean, look, the people, campgrounds have got to make some money doing this.
Right. If they're not making money, they're not going to do it. That's the point, right? So that's what I'm saying. If you want free, you're going to pay for it in sweat, literally. And if you don't want free, you're going to pay for it. Like, you're going to pay for your electric and you're going to pay for your air conditioning. So I'm just going to add one thing, because I interviewed for another podcast that I do that's for
Campground
Confidential, for campground owners. That's the target market. It's not out yet. It's going to be out next week. I interviewed someone from a campground franchise. It now has two different locations. They just opened their second, and it's called RV Self Park USA. And this is built on the model that people like Emily want more options, that are quick, safe, affordable places to stop overnight between point A and point B. So the first location that they did was in Missouri. They just opened their second location at that Florida Georgia line, right? With the huge volume.
Where so many people get tired.
So many people are stopping before they get into Florida or whatever. So they found that second location, right? Those where people are really looking for those overnight. So I interviewed him. I was very interested in knowing what their data was, right? Like, what their market research was. They're also looking to franchise this. They're looking to create these sort of prototype models that then other people can create throughout the country, specifically to serve people. But again, it's not going to be free. But I think the model is that, yes, people are looking for an in and out, and I don't have to spend a fortune.
Do you know what they're charging roughly?
I couldn't say off the top of my head. They are using dynamic pricing. I feel like in the 40 to 60 range.
Well, that's the gap though, right? In the marketplace.
I think if you're going to expect to spend less than $50 for some place to safely park overnight and use resources, I think is not reasonable. So, but this is, you self-check in. You scan your code and the hookups turn on. Like,
I think this is going to be a very successful model.
I
think, like so many things, it's because there's a gap in the marketplace where someone like Emily's seeing $100 a night at KOA.
Yeah. Nobody wants to spend that. Yeah.
You know, maybe there's some State Parks or Corps of Engineers at 20 a night, but they're not readily available at the roadside. I think the huge gap in the entire camping industry is the $50, $60 a night price range. So I mean, if they position these intelligently, like it sounds like they really just did with the new one.
Yeah.
RVers will love this because I would totally spend $50 over the warm-up parking lot if it's a bit quieter, bit safer.
Yeah. Years ago, we got to the place where we said, yeah, okay, no, enough of that. It's not worth it. I'd rather spend the cost of really a breakfast for the five of us, you know, to have a good night's sleep. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'll keep an eye on it. I thought it was a very interesting, take on a market that's usually really obsessed with resort campground and more and more and more amenities and glamping, blah, blah, blah. And then there's another side where they're saying, hey, yeah, but there's also a bunch of people driving from here to there that want a safe and cheap place to stay. And don't
I hope they have a dog park. I hope they have a dog park. I'm not putting you on the spot asking you, but I'm just saying, like, you know, you want to get out, you want to walk your dog, and you want to like plug in, get the AC going, go to bed.
Yeah. That's it. Well, if you're interested in more, well, like I said, it will be on the Campground Confidential podcast in a week or so. But you can also go to rvselfpark.com and you can see more about it there. So, yep, I just looked at the rates and it's like $39.99 for 14 hours. Isn't that interesting? So they're actually allotting it. And then 18 hours, $44.99.
I think that's fascinating.
Isn't that awesome? Yeah. Super interesting.
I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest with you, I would like to see a price for 10 hours so you can pull in and go to sleep.
Yeah.
That is really, wow. Mm-hmm. That is such a different pricing model.
We're keeping an eye on the market, folks.
We do our best and it helps that we have the
Anytime I see something interesting, I just message somebody and say, hey, I find this interesting. Do you want to chat?
It helps that we have the host of Campground Confidential come on the RV Atlas podcast. All right, everybody. We'll see you at the budget-friendly overnight stop just off the interstate for $35 a night that has electric and a dog park and security.
All right. See you there.
I don't know if I'm going to call it a campground, but we'll see you there.
We'll see. See you. Thank you so much for joining us for the 10th anniversary season of the RV Atlas.
To find out more about the topics discussed on this show, head on over to thervatlas.com.
And to join the friendliest group of RVers, head on over to the RV Atlas group on Facebook and make sure to join us on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram at the RV Atlas.
And if you enjoy our show, please consider leaving us a review over on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
And make sure to pick up copies of Where Should We Camp Next, wherever books are sold.
And we will see you at the campground.